Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, Indian Chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. Temper all the times I've
tried. Welcome to Court Appointed, two dudes' perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer, dude, and judge.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Well, we're both getting ready for some trips. We're kind of doing opposite things, though, I think.
What? I'm going down and you're going up?
Well, you're going on a cruise.
Yeah.
And you're going to be on a cruise ship with a lot of people.
Yeah. The coronavirus cruise 2020.
And I'm going to be going fly fishing this weekend out into the mountains. So I'm isolating myself, and you're running headfirst into it.
Boy, I'll say I'm running with the herd.
So you're doing the, what is it, some podcast cruise, right?
Yeah, well, Joku cruise.
Joku?
Joku cruise.
Joku, wasn't that like the Juku? Wasn't that the battle in Star Wars?
Oh, I don't know. I wasn't not much of a Star Wars fan. Once you get past the initial few, that was about it for me.
The first three?
Yeah, that was about it.
I like the first three a lot. They're still probably my favorites. The prequels, the second three, they were movies. And then the last three have been really good. So
yeah. Now, Sydney and Justin get invited. They've been invited the last 3 years. I think this makes four now. They've been invited to perform on this. They have a lot of other kinds of types of performers, some of them singers, some of them, I don't know, magicians and comedians and all kinds of things. And it's put together by a group of people that like do certain things. And the whole ship is basically a chartered cruise ship. Everybody that's there is part of the same group. And they have been invited for 4 years in a row to come and perform, and they bring us along to babysit the grandkids because they're tied up most nights working.
And you have ridden the coattails 4 years in a row.
This is actually only our second.
Only your second?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I say coattails, but you do significant babysitting duties during the cruise, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, because they've got to perform most every night and things like that. Then there's activities during the day, and a lot of times they're holding, you know, things where they're meet and greet type things, and they hold classes, you know, like Justin might teach people about, here's how you do a podcast. You know, any of you that may be interested in starting your own. So you
step
know.
One, have idea. Step two, talk to someone about that idea while recording it. Step three, publish.
But it's not that easy if you don't know.
No, there are a lot of different little things that go into it with the editing and little tricks that we've kind of come across, because things don't always go right.
So. No, they do not go right. You're constantly battling that.
Well, I'm looking pretty forward to my fly fishing excursion into the mountains. Hopefully I'm going to catch some trout and not a coronavirus.
Yeah, hopefully I'm not going to catch a disease. I said, it's not that I'm worried about dying from it. It's just that I don't want to be stuck on a boat for a month while we're all quarantined out at sea or something like that.
Well, actually, I would like to be stuck in the mountains fly fishing for a month and quarantined. That would actually be kind of nice. So.
Well, the only reason I don't is I don't want my business to fall apart while I'm gone.
That's true.
So nobody's going to get paid or anything else.
I know. What's going to happen?
I know.
Try data. Try what?
Yeah. Try Usta.
Well, I got some bad news for you. I don't know if you knew this or not, but Judge Judy is hanging up her gavel after 25 years.
I saw that.
Yep. She's been on CBS for 25 years. And now, since they have 25 years of reruns, they decided to buy them from her. And so she's selling them all her reruns. And she is going to start a different project now called Judy Justice. Yeah.
Yeah.
And she was on the Ellen DeGeneres show. And Ellen asked her what the new show is going to be about. And she said, I can't tell you just yet.
Yeah.
So she probably has some sort of a non-disclosure thing where she can't talk about it.
I guarantee you she's going to be berating people into trying to make them do the right thing.
There will be some Judge Judy's boot camp. Judge Judy berates.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Judge Judy, she's not going to change her style. She is who she is.
So this was kind of interesting. I think we had talked about this before a little bit, but I don't know if we talked about these actual numbers. She signed a deal with CBS a few years ago, and CBS acquired the complete library to Judge Judy, and they paid her almost $100 million for 5,200 hours of programming. And she ranks as one of the top-rated syndicated programs, averaging roughly 9 million viewers a day and is TV's most-watched court show.
Yeah, well, I think that last year she made $147 million, and she was the highest-paid host on TV.
I mean, that's not a bad year's haul.
It ain't chump change.
No, no, that's real money.
Yeah, real money. I'd take half that and be happy.
Would you know? Yeah,
I'd take a fourth. I'm not a greedy person.
Yeah, yeah. Not at all.
Come on, Judge Judy. Zuckerberg didn't do me any good. Why don't you throw me some cash so the poor old guy can retire?
Well, now, we talked about this a little bit earlier, and as everyone is probably aware, unless you're living in a cave somewhere, which might not be a bad thing.
Yeah, that might be a good time to be living in a cave.
The coronavirus is spreading across the United States now. Yeah. So every time you check on the news, it seems like it's traveled to somewhere else and there's a different state that's reporting cases of it. It seems to be popping up everywhere.
Well, just Washington State exploded here recently. They were talking about how, you know, we didn't have any deaths and there were very few reported cases. And all of a sudden, well, we've got one. No, now there's two. Well, now there's eight.
Yeah, and that was actually really close to where Rich lives out in Seattle.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And I think the news, though.
Rich is your boyhood friend.
It is my boyhood friend. And actually my manhood friend as well, for what that's worth.
Yeah, but not as much since he lives on the West Coast and you're on the East Coast.
Well, yeah, but that's the thing about lifelong friends like that. I cannot talk to Rich for a couple of weeks and pick up the phone and talk to him, and it's like no time's passed at all. We're making fart jokes and talking about setting firecrackers on lighting stuff up, and, you know.
That sounds more like a boyhood friend than a manhood friend.
You might be right. Yeah, last time I did see him, we did actually make a potato cannon. So,
well, there you go. You and your potato cannons.
But yeah, we don't want to make too much light about it because there have been deaths. But one death that is coming is everyone's 401k as well.
Yeah.
Because it is really affecting the stock market and the world economy, too. Mm-hmm. So it really goes to show that we are kind of a global economy, and there's a lot of commerce that has to do with this.
Well, you know, Mary noticed she was in Walmart the other day, and there would be like whole aisles that were just about empty, while other aisles would be completely stocked.
Yeah.
And she said, well, what's going on? Well, why aren't these here? And one of the ladies finally said, we're not allowed to talk about it. And what's happening is a lot of the stuff they get is from China.
Oh, so they
can't
ship it.
And it's affecting it. Yeah, they can't ship the stuff out, or the factories have shut down because they're under quarantine or something like that. So they said they listed like three places, like Walmart, Costco, and some other big box store, and that they were going to be greatly affected because of their big dealings they do with China.
So one of our listeners suggested we do a topic about the law that goes into place whenever there is a pandemic like this. And I thought it was a good idea. I think her name was Dr. McElroy or something.
Yeah, Dr. Sydney McElroy.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a close personal friend of mine.
She is. Oh, wow.
And that's what she said. She said, Dad, you and Michael should do a podcast about the laws that where the guy the power, the government has the power to invoke quarantines.
And when Sydney McElroy talks, we listen.
Yeah, she's been pretty successful in what she does. So.
What is that? Is it E.F. Hutton? Is that the old commercials?
Yep.
When E.F. Hutton talks, people listen. So
when Dr. Sid talks, people listen.
That's right. So we thought we would do this episode talking about pandemics and the different laws that go into place whenever there is an emergency such as this one.
That's right. And so, why do they have that power? Is it like the 19th Amendment?
The 19th Amendment?
Yeah.
Well, actually, wait a second. What is the 19th Amendment?
I don't know. I just threw out a number.
That's the right to vote, isn't it?
I don't know. I threw out a number hoping to be higher than that, but I realized as I said it, I missed the mark. It was supposed to be one like counted. I should have said like the 35th Amendment or something like that.
Yeah, that's basically the women's right to vote. That's women's suffrage is the 19th Amendment. So yeah, that has absolutely nothing to do with pandemics.
Okay.
So yeah.
It's not a pandemic that women are voting, huh?
No, that is not a pandemic that women are voting. That is actually a good thing.
It depends on who you talk to, though.
Yeah.
There could be some that would disagree.
And if Dr. Sydney McElroy hears you say that, she might slap you across the face.
She might pandemic me.
Yeah, she'd pandemic you. So the federal government has the authority to regulate pandemics and quarantines and things like that. And do you know where they derive that power from? Give you a hint, not the 19th Amendment.
The Interstate Commerce Clause.
That's right.
Really?
Yes. You have learned things on this podcast.
Well, I knew that was a catch-all, so I just thought, well, I'll throw that out there, but I really had no idea.
Well, I gave you a bit of a teaser earlier talking about how it's affecting commerce and things like that. Oh. So I was trying to plant the seed there.
And Commerce Clause.
That's right. So Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution authorizes Congress to impose taxes to provide for the general welfare of the United States and to regulate interstate commerce. The epidemiologic investigations conducted by the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, that's called the CDC, mm-hmm. and members of the U.S. public health are examples of federal activities that are generally supported by those authorities. Under the authority of the U.S. Constitution's Commerce Clause, the federal government also oversees such health-related activities as the inspection of meat, poultry, and other foods, the regulation of drugs, biological products, and medical devices, the regulation of biological agents that have the potential to pose severe threat to public health and safety. Although the provisions in the U.S. Constitution are broad, the activities of the federal government relating to health and welfare nonetheless fit within the enumerated powers of the Commerce Clause. It's well-settled law that fits within it. Hmm. And if you think about it, it does make sense that this does affect interstate commerce because it really does.
Well, yeah. And not only that, it can affect it by the spread of a disease by interstate commerce.
Well, yeah, that's true, but I don't think it's much of a reach to say this is part of the Commerce Clause has the power to, that's where they get their power from.
I didn't realize that was it, for the government to invoke quarantines comes from the Commerce Clause.
Well, it does. The entire thing about the CDC and the U.S. Public Health Service, all that comes from the Commerce Clause, because the U.S. government can't just have power that exists because they say so. They have to trace it down to some sort of government, some enumerated power they have. That's how our Constitution works.
Hmm. Well, does it list specifically how they are able to enforce this and use it?
No, it just says that they can. So they build these agencies under the authority from the Commerce Clause, and it's up to those authorities to publish their different regulations. And those are usually published not in the U.S. Code, but in CFR or Code of Federal Regulations. So there's different CFR sections that have to deal with each individual governmental entity and what their regulations are.
But it's not a, it doesn't, I guess what I'm trying to figure out is like, is it like a military action?
No, it is not.
Okay.
This is not military.
Because I heard these reports like in China where they have large portions of the population quarantined basically within their city that's already infected.
Right.
So that people can't come and go in there. And they said that there were reports of people trying to leave against the government's wishes, and they were shot or executed or whatever.
Yeah.
And that's what I was trying to determine. I don't think that we have the same standard to quarantines as they would there. I don't think anybody here would be shot if they tried to violate a quarantine.
No, and we can get into that a bit more about the kind of the differences, but there are actually, in our history, there were some quarantines that took place back in the turn of the century, 1900s, where they were kind of like that. They were forced in place, almost militaristically, almost like martial law was imposed. But that is not what we were talking about. We're talking about more about the kind of civil ability to control these types of things.
Okay.
And where that power is derived from. But before we get into any further, I think we actually have a motion before the court today.
Why, yes, if it pleases your honor, we would like to approach the bench to pay for court costs.
All right, you may approach. Who do we have on the docket?
We have our good friends at BetterHelp. That's H-E-L-P.
So I have to ask you, is there something interfering with your happiness, or is it preventing you from achieving your goals?
Being on a cruise ship with the coronavirus.
That's your goal?
That might be it. Yeah, my goal is to not get the coronavirus.
Well, judging
but that has nothing to do with my mental health. That's my physical health.
Judging from all the hand sanitizer that I saw Mary has packed upstairs to spirit away on your cruise, you should be fine.
I hope so.
You should take one of those bottles that you have hand sanitizer in and fill it full of liquor. They'll never catch on.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd want to drink out of that.
BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist.
You can start communicating in under 24 hours.
And here's the thing. It's not a crisis line. It's not self-help. It is a professional counseling done securely online.
There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's counselor network, which may not be locally available in many areas.
And the service is available for clients worldwide.
You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor.
You'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions so you won't ever have to sit in an uncomfortable waiting room with traditional therapy, reading old, outdated magazines.
Blah, nobody wants that.
With the puzzles already finished in them.
That's right. BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
And it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
Visit their website and read testimonials that are posted daily. That's at betterhelp.com/reviews.
So visit betterhelp.com/court. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 700,000 people taking charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
And it would not be a court-appointed ad if there was not a special offer for our listeners.
Oh, yeah. Come and get it.
They get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp, that's HELP.com/court.
Mike and Tommy say, feel better today with BetterHelp.
So, much like everything in the United States, the authority to quarantine people with infectious diseases is split between the state and federal governments. States and tribal governments recognized by the federal government have primary authority to quarantine people within their boundaries. So again, you have state rights, which are going to be in place, and the federal government is kind of overarching all of that. But initially, things fall to the state level to be regulated.
Now, is that written somewhere in each state's law, or is that some kind of...
Well, each state's going to have its own health department and things like that. And some different things vary from state to state. For example, I know if you move to Hawaii, for example, and you're bringing a pet with you, they actually will quarantine your pet for a period of time, too, to make sure it doesn't have any diseases or any sickness or things like that.
Really?
When you travel back from certain places, you're not supposed to bring any fruit and things like that, because you can bring you can contaminate the local sources of some food and whatnot.
I remember that driving back from Florida when we used to drive down there from Waycross. There was places there where it said you have to declare any fruit you have.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm like, is this serious? We had to declare fruit?
Now, here is the interesting thing. For communicable diseases for which apprehension, detention, or conditional release of people are authorized, that has to be specified in an executive order of the president. So that's going to be something that comes directly from the president in their executive power. It's not going to be something that's delegated to like the CDC or things like that. The president's going to be the one who signs off on that.
Well, I think that Trump did an executive order on like January 31st that banned certain flights from certain countries to come into the United States.
Yeah. There are certain executive orders that are in place for different infectious diseases such as cholera, diphtheria, infectious tuberculosis, plague, smallpox, yellow fever, viral hemorrhagic fever.
Easy for you to say.
I knew you were going to say that. Severe acute respiratory syndrome, SARS, the flu, and other kinds of strains of that. And the Department of Health and Human Services is responsible for these quarantine decisions, specifically the CDC, Prevention Division of Global Migration and Quarantine. And as of March, this is as of 2017 in March, they specify this. And these are more like for foreign people coming in. These aren't for people that are already in place. All commercial passenger flights must report deaths or illness to the CDC. So if there's some sort of death or illness, then they have to report that.
We brought in 10 dead people on that plane, just like you might want to know.
It always makes me think of the movie Airplane, where they start putting eggs out of their mouth. They catch the disease. Individuals must apply for a travel permit if they are under a federal quarantine, isolation, or conditional release order. So if you are under one of these different things, then you actually have to file for some sort of permit to be able to travel.
Well, I would guess so.
And whenever an individual is moving between U.S. states and is reasonably believed to be infected with a quarantinable communicable disease in a qualifying stage, the CDC may apprehend or examine that person for potential infection. And this also includes regulatory authority permitting the CDC director to prohibit the importation of animals or products that pose a threat to public health.
Yeah, they reported that a dog in Hong Kong caught it.
Yeah, I saw that. I think that they're really struggling to kind of figure out what it is and how it's transmitted, because for the longest time, they did not seem to think that it had really infiltrated the borders of the United States, that they could kind of track where it came from, because these were people mm-hmm. who had traveled to different infected areas. But then all of a sudden you have them popping up in places that there's no way to trace how it got there.
Well, I think too, though, part of what happened, you know, China is not an open country, if you know what I mean. They're not exactly a democracy. And China and Russia, they don't like to fail at anything or anything like that. You know, it's just like Chernobyl. Mm-hmm. If you've ever seen that series about Chernobyl, they didn't say for a while that there was a problem, that their core was melting or anything, because they didn't want to, that looked like failure. Well, I think the same thing happened with this disease. I think that it was going on for several weeks prior to the rest of the world becoming aware of it.
Yeah.
I think they were handling it internally, and they weren't letting any information go out about it. And so there were people that came and went during that time period when they were kind of keeping it under wraps. And we don't know who they are or, you know, anything else, because as far as we know, they traveled before any of this happened.
Right. So they may have been carriers for it as well.
Yeah.
Now, there are some rules that have to do with the CDC. It does not authorize compulsory medical testing, vaccination, or medical treatment without prior informed consent. So you can't force the medical treatment on these people.
Experiment on them.
Yeah. The CDC has to advise individuals subject to medical examinations that they will be conducted by an authorized health worker with prior informed consent. And there's a lot of due process protections for individuals to public health orders, including a right to counsel for indigent individuals. So if you're being detained like this, you have the right to counsel. Part of this I was talking about is that in the history of it, if you look back through the United States, there have been different instances where they have quarantined people in place and kept people who not only were sick, but who were well in these places too, and not allowed to travel.
Yeah.
Which if you think about that, that kind of has a lot to do with your liberties and your ability to travel freely.
Well, it's like a death sentence too.
It could be. Yeah.
I mean that you're healthy and you say, well, I want to get out. Well, no, you're in the exposed area. Sorry. You got to stay and ride it out. Wait a minute. Let me out of here.
Yeah. I don't think so.
But I mean, if they quarantine you and you can't leave, what happens? You got to stay there and hope you don't die.
I guess. I don't know. And I think that's one of our civil liberties that we have here in the United States. We take for granted that it's like, well, nobody's going to keep me there if I don't want to. I'm an American. I'll do whatever I want.
I guess probably I don't think they would be that extreme here. I think what they would do is they would screen you. And if you didn't test positive for it, then worst case scenario, they move you out of the area in some type of a, you know, containment type manner, and then bring you somewhere and leave you in quarantine somewhere else.
Yeah.
And then after 14 days or 21 days or whatever it is, if you don't have it, you test you again, you're okay. Then they probably let you out.
It was like 2014 or 2015. I was traveling in Indonesia and I was on my way back and I was coming through. It might've been Hong Kong or something like that. And they had everybody who got off the international flight, walk down this long hallway. That's where they all went to. And there was a station set up, and it just seemed kind of weird because they kind of funneled you in artificially through this mm-hmm. one little point.
Yeah.
I was like, what in the world? There was somebody sitting there with a computer screen. So once I got past it, I looked and saw that it was a temperature sensor. So it was basically able to detect people's temperature.
Yeah.
So if they saw somebody came through that was a high temperature, that meant they had a fever and they were probably going to jerk you out of line and quarantine you.
Huh.
And that was during, I think, maybe SARS or one of those kind of swine flu, it might have been, actually. I can't remember. But I thought that was kind of interesting that took place in that country.
You know what I'm worried about getting infected by?
What's that?
Those herpes monkeys. Have you seen that? They got a bunch of herpes monkeys running around loose in Florida.
Do they?
Yeah. Somebody brought in some type of strain of monkey or something.
Oh, that's that the wasn't ones native. Those are the ones that are outside Jacksonville, I think.
I think so. But they got they're say that they all have herpes. And you know, how'd you get herpes? From a monkey. What?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, I guess that they, you know, there's other ways to get it. That's not, you know, just, you know, sex things.
Right.
I mean, they could bite you or scratch you or something like that, I would guess.
You catch mono from a monkey.
Really?
It's a little embarrassing.
Hmm.
So the Division of Global Migration and Quarantine, also known as the DGMQ for the U.S. Center for Disease Control, operates different small quarantine facilities at different U.S. ports of entry. There are some at a land crossing in El Paso, and there's 19 different international airports that have them as well for the same kind of thing. When somebody comes in and they have some sort of obvious exposure to one of these kinds of diseases and they could potentially infect other travelers, they go ahead and quarantine there at the airport.
I bet they quarantine any zombies that try to get in too.
Probably so.
They're too cold, they see on the temperature thing.
Now, these facilities are all very small. They're not geared to set up to stop a large pandemic. They're basically for 1 to 2 travelers that come through at a time for kind of a short observation period.
Right.
So it's not really something that's set up to like, okay, we're going to quarantine this whole flight. I mean, they don't even have the facility to do that.
Yeah, that's one of the things they were running these numbers on, like a worst case scenario in the United States. There aren't enough hospitals for everybody to go to if this were to hit very hard, you know?
Yeah. The U.S. can also put immediate quarantines on imported products if a contagious disease is identified and can be traced back to a certain shipment. So they have the ability to seize shipments if there is something they can trace back to. Mm-hmm. Again, that is something that the Secretary of Health and Human Services can do pretty quickly. They don't have to try to get any kind of government approval for that. They're the ones who can do that immediately, which is probably a good thing. You need somebody who can make quick decisions.
You don't
about
want
that.
A bunch of red tape to have to get through with something like that. You want to contain it. Well, that's like there was a iPhone plant in China that they had an outbreak there, and so they shut down the plant and had quit making the phones. But how many of those phones might have gotten out of there that had the virus with them?
Yeah, your iPhone's infected you.
Yeah.
I was going to talk
about... You got pink eye. Pink iPhone.
Pink iPhone? So one of the first examples of quarantine law in the United States was actually all the way back in colonial America back in 1663, where there was an attempt to curb an outbreak of smallpox. The city of New York established a quarantine. And that's probably the first one you can trace back. And 1663 is a long time ago, so that's probably is the first one.
In the United States, yeah, because we wouldn't have had any history probably before then.
No, there was no one here to quarantine.
Yeah.
The Native Americans may have quarantined.
Native Americans, they were healthy till we got here.
That's true. Smallpox was not good for them. In the 1730s, New York built a quarantine station on Bedloe's Island, which was a different island, I guess, off of New York, where they had a quarantine station. So how'd you like to go visit Bedloe's Island?
No, that's like when they used to have those leper colonies or whatever, where people with leprosy, they'd make them all go there so they wouldn't contaminate anybody or whatever.
The leper colonies?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk of leper colonies in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus would always go there and stroll about freely, curing people.
Right. Well, you don't have leper colonies much these days.
I don't think leprosy is really a...
You don't think it's a thing anymore?
It's not a hot topic anymore. I think it does exist in different places, but... For the most part.
Then that, if you don't have any, then that joke completely falls apart.
When I was younger, attending Catholic elementary school, I had a real fear of leprosy.
Really?
It sounded horrible, and I thought it was probably everywhere, because it was all over the Bible.
Yeah.
It's kind of scary for a kid.
Yeah. That's true. You don't want things falling off your body that you might need later.
No. In early June of 1832, there was a cholera epidemic in New York. Governor Enos Throop, which is a great name.
Enos Throop.
Called a special session of the legislature for June 21st to pass a public health act by both the House and the Senate of the state legislature. It included a strict quarantine along upper and lower New York Canadian frontier. In addition, New York City Mayor Walter Brown established a quarantine against peoples and products of Europe and Asia, which prohibited ships from approaching closer than 300 yards to the city, and all vehicles were ordered to stop 1.5 miles away. So that was one of those, all right, nobody's coming in and nobody's going out.
Yeah. Well, they also called cholera at the time the Asiatic disease.
Yeah.
Because they were saying that's where it originated from and came over. So that's how they had to stop at the ports, the things that were coming in, and they thought bringing the disease with it.
There was an immigrant inspection station on Ellis Island, which was built in 1892, and... That was actually mistakenly assumed to be a quarantine station, but it was actually a marine hospital and only qualified as a contagious disease facility to handle less virulent diseases like measles, trachoma, and less advanced stages of tuberculosis and diphtheria. Those afflicted with smallpox, yellow fever, cholera, leprosy, or typhoid fever could neither be received nor treated there. So if you came to as an immigrant to Ellis Island and you had the kind of the easier things, they could kind of help you out. But if you didn't, and you had the big ticket items that I mentioned, then you couldn't really come. They wouldn't let you in. I don't know where you went, but you couldn't come in.
You don't have to go home, but you can't stay here.
Yeah. Now, one of the more interesting stories talking about quarantines and diseases was Mary Mallon. She was quarantined in 1907 under the Greater New York Charter, Section 1169-1170, which permitted New York City Board of Health to remove to a proper place any person sick with a contagious, pestilential, or infectious disease. Do you know who Mary Mallon is?
Mary Mallon?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
Maybe you know her as Typhoid Mary.
Oh.
Yeah, she
wait,
was...
Mary, my wife, your sister hacks and coughs around. I call her that sometimes.
Yeah. Typhoid Mary was an Irish cook, and she is believed to have infected 51 people, three of whom died with typhoid fever, and she was the first person in the United States identified as an asymptomatic carrier of the disease. So she didn't show any exterior signs of it. She just carried it.
So they put her face on a poster and said, if you see this woman, run?
Yeah, kind of. Well, she was actually, she was a cook, so it made it even worse because she was infecting people through providing cooking meals for them. And she actually refused to stop working as a cook. And she was twice forcibly isolated by authorities and died after a total of nearly three decades in isolation. So,
wow.
Yeah, they actually tried to get her to take different.
So it like never went away. No. She was a carrier from then on. It wasn't like she could clear a certain period of time or something, huh?
No, she kept evidently causing it. Now, of course, this is back by when medicine was maybe a little bit less nuanced, but, you know, we can assume that she carried it the entire time.
Well, I've heard that reference many a time, Typhoid Mary, yeah. But I never knew that how that was tied to, but that's something.
Yeah, she actually is a pretty interesting character. We might actually want to do a full episode on her maybe next time.
Huh.
Sticking with our whole disease, transmittable diseases type topics.
Well, it's very topical right now. And, you know, the more you know.
Topical. Better wash that off.
It's a topical cream.
During the 1918 flu pandemic, people were also quarantined. Most commonly suspect cases of infectious diseases are requested to voluntarily quarantine themselves. So they say, hey, you're sick. Can you please quarantine yourself? Federal and local quarantine statutes have only been uncommonly invoked since then, including one suspected smallpox case in 1963. So really, forced quarantines are pretty rare. You don't see them come about. But there are some laws out there which allow the government authorities to issue those.
Well, it's strange when you look back through the history and you see how many times we've had these, and it's basically the flu.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're not raised with a fear of the flu for the most part. I don't remember hearing anything about it as a kid.
I don't either.
There weren't flu shots. I mean, what did we do? I don't know what happened that we didn't have to worry about it, but there was not this fear of the flu. People didn't go get flu shots. You heard about the flu symptoms. You know, there's some of the medicines that advertise on TV and talk about flu symptoms. You don't think of it as being anything more than the common cold.
Yeah.
And the flu has wiped out millions of people in different waves and different forms that it's come through.
Growing up, I don't know anybody that had the flu. Like, it just, I don't remember it.
I don't either. I don't remember anybody dying from it. Don't remember hearing anything about it. It's just like the polar vortex.
Yeah.
I lived almost 60 years before I ever heard the term polar vortex, and now the damn thing keeps coming down here and making it cold. I don't know who let it loose.
Not very often, though.
Who let the dogs out?
Who let the polar vortex out?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I...
They just invented these things, I think. I don't know.
You know, it's one of those things. Did it exist, and just now we have more of a proliferation of access to information, and the internet has made the world a smaller place.
Now you can Google everything and find out what it's called?
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure there are people dying from the flu all over the place when we were growing up. We just didn't hear about it because we didn't have the technology to be able to hear about it. They didn't put that on the nightly news.
No, they only told about happy things.
Yeah. Now, in the U.S., there were no federal quarantine orders issued from between 1963 and 2020. But when American citizens were evacuated from China during this coronavirus outbreak, nearly 200 Americans were evacuated from China because of the virus, and they were actually quarantined on a military base in Southern California for 2 weeks.
Right.
Which was the first time that had been done since 1963. It's really kind of rare. And they were actually very relieved that they were quarantined there. They were glad to get out of China and glad to get back here.
Yeah, you couldn't just turn them into the general public.
Yeah, absolutely not. And currently right now, as far as health officials know, they think that it takes up to 2 weeks for someone who's infected to get sick. And I guess it turned out that none of those people were actually showed up to be carriers of it. So, but like I said, it's the very first federal order issued since 1963 when a woman was quarantined after she returned from a trip to Sweden during a smallpox outbreak, and she could not prove that she had been vaccinated. So that was the first time that that's been invoked, the executive order for quarantine.
What worries me about getting on the ship is that if one person, I mean, there's supposed to be like 3,000 people on this ship.
Yeah.
And if one person test positive somehow for the coronavirus or get sick and they test them and he got the coronavirus, none of us are leaving the boat. They're going to anchor us out in the bay and we're just stuck there.
Now, the question is, would Sydney and Justin have to continue to perform every night?
I think all performances are off at that point. At that point, it's every man for himself.
Under the quarantine, that all performances are off.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if they're still going to feed you. We might have to start sizing each other up and trying to eat the ones that aren't infected.
That's like the that case we talked about in one of the very first episodes about the cabin boy.
Yeah, they all ate the cabin boy.
That's right.
He was the most expendable. He was young. His meat was fresher.
Now, there are some other interesting uses of quarantine power by different presidents. This is kind of a funny one. U.S. President John F. Kennedy referred to the U.S. Navy's interdiction of shipping going to Cuba during the Cuban Missile Crisis as a quarantine rather than a blockade, mm-hmm. because a quarantine is a legal act in peacetime, whereas a blockade is an act of aggression as defined by the U.N. Charter.
Yeah.
So it was a quarantine, not a blockade.
Semantics.
Yeah. Thought that was kind of interesting.
That's pretty clever.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I remember seeing that in one of the movies about them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now, there's been other kinds of different laws passed about pandemics. In 2006, Congress passed and the president signed the Pandemic and All Hazard Preparedness Act, the PAHPA.
PAHPA.
Yeah. Government love their acronyms.
Yeah.
And then again, in March of 2013, Congress passed and the president signed the Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness Reauthorization Act. So probably the first one had some sort of sunset provision on it,
right, meaning
that it expired.
And they renewed it.
They renewed it in 2013. And then again, on June 24th, 2019, Congress passed and the president signed the Pandemic and All Hazards Preparedness and Advancing Innovation Act, which I guess was trying to look forward to what we could expect in the future. Let's be a little prepared for these kinds of things as they pop up.
Mm-hmm.
So, but there, you know, the U.S. government has been thinking about different pandemics and how we're going to control this. And as we become a more global economy and people traveling back and forth and whatnot, it is probably a real fear that people are going to have to be quarantined at different times to stop the spread of different viruses and whatnot.
That's what you think about is about if they had trouble with it spreading to different countries back in the 16 and 1700s, people weren't very mobile then. You didn't have airplanes. You know, you're riding on donkeys or you're riding on boats or something, you know. You didn't have real good ways to get around, and yet it still spread from country to country, and it spread through their goods and through the people, you know. And now, how would you have a chance? People are mobile. People are everywhere.
Good sir, I have to travel on the morrow to a faraway land. How shall I get there? Take a donkey. I don't think donkey travel is one of the prime modes of transportation in the United States.
You don't think so?
I don't think so.
You never know. That's where they got the saying, my ass is dragging.
You think?
Yeah, I think so.
Could be.
Dragging me right to another country where I'm going to infect somebody.
So the latest act they passed, they're trying to be a bit more prepared. And there are some traditional things that were passed in the first iteration of it, and the major program areas were biomedical advanced research and developmental authority, emergency support functions, grants, trying to identify at-risk individuals. They created the National Health Security Strategy, and they tried to educate and train people about different ways that the diseases were spread. Now, the newest one passed goes into, like I said, a bit more, it's a bit more of a robust system, which it probably needs to be. and that creates an assistant secretary for preparedness and response. So there's actually a position that is tailored for preparedness and response. Somebody who looks out at that the whole time. There is regional healthcare emergency preparedness and response systems, the military and civilian partnership for trauma readiness, strengthening and assessing emergency response workforce, and hospital preparedness and emergency surge capacity, and also enhancing situational awareness and biosurveillance. So who knows what that means?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of these things that they might talk about increasing it, but there's some basic things that they have really dropped the ball on in this. So like when they were transporting some of the people that were infected in China back to America, and they had them quarantined on the flight, they were sitting inside this room on the plane that there were other people that weren't infected that were outside of this room, but this room did not have a ceiling on it. It was four walls, but there was no ceiling. So I don't think they were very well contained. The other thing that nobody has talked about until recently is all these masks people wear around to try to help as an extra protection.
Yeah.
They don't help you protect you from getting it. They help you if you have it from spreading it to others, but it doesn't keep you from getting it. It offers no protection in that manner.
One of the main ways that it's spread is by people cough and something gets on somebody.
Yeah.
So that's one of the main ways. Then also somebody posted on my Facebook page that the CDC was recommending you should shave your beard.
Yeah.
That is false. Yep. Absolutely false.
Yep. You have to get rid of facial hair because you can't make good contact with your face mask there.
You can have my beard when you can shave it off my cold dead face. Shave it off my cold dead face.
Well, I thought it was interesting. The first really recorded use of the quarantine was to do with the Black Death plague. And quarantine is from the Italian quaranta, meaning 40. And that was the number of days, roughly.
40 days?
Yeah, that they felt you had to be quarantined to show whether you would or not. And it was adopted as an obligatory means of separating persons, animals, and goods that may have been exposed to a contagious disease. So this was the 14th century, and they're already thinking about that and how to separate people out so they don't continue to spread it.
And while they're separated, let's go ahead and bloodlet a little bit.
The plague was initially spread by sailors, rats, and cargo arriving in Sicily from the eastern Mediterranean. It quickly spread throughout Italy, decimating the populations of powerful city-states like Florence, Venice, and Genoa. And the pestilence then moved from ports in Italy to ports in France and Spain. From northeastern Italy, the plague crossed the Alps and affected populations in Austria and Central Europe. Toward the end of the 14th century, the epidemic had abated but not disappeared, and outbreaks of pneumonic and septicemic plague occurred in different cities during the next 350 years.
Do we know how it crossed the Alps? Was it on elephants?
Probably on donkeys.
Was it on elephants?
It could have been. Muhammad, did he drive the elephants over it?
It's Hannibal.
Hannibal?
I believe.
Hannibal, Muhammad. I don't know.
I think
Hannibal Lecter?
No. I think Hannibal's going the other way, though. He was headed towards Italy.
It's not known why 40 days was chosen as the length of isolation, as a time needed to avoid communication, but it may have been derived from the Hippocratic theory regarding acute illness. Another theory is that the number of days was connected to the Pythagorean theorem. Boy, they love to give me these hard names. The number four had particular significance. 40 days was the period of the biblical travail of Jesus in the desert, and 40 days was believed to represent the time necessary for dissipating the pestilential miasma from bodies and goods through the system of isolation, fumigation, and disinfection. In the centuries that followed, the system of isolation was improved. So they would isolate goods for that amount, and their way that they went to try to get rid of the diseases was just simply to ventilate them. They would have put them somewhere where there was like a crosswind blowing through to ventilate these things.
I got an idea for a business.
What's that?
It's a new health product called the Quarantine Cleanse. It lasts 40 days.
Yeah.
And that's all I got so far.
Is that like one of those colon cleansings?
It could be that. Yeah, sure.
But there were no known medicines or anything, so that's all they could do was the natural stuff around, is use water, soap, and air. That was about it. They had no other means of dealing with this stuff.
You get water, soap, and air.
Yeah, take your pick. Which do you want to try?
Take a little bit of each.
Have a face mask. What's that face mask? That's it. It's the donkey that I rode here. I shaved off part of the fur on his butt. That's what I'm breathing through.
Like a face mask out of donkey butt hair?
Yeah. I can't think of anything tougher.
If you get through that, I can get through anything. Well, that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
So Legal Briefs is the part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions. This one might just consist of me telling you an acronym and you tell me what it means. What do you think about that?
Oh, I think those acronyms could mean anything.
I wouldn't do that. That's no fun. But I will start off. What does CDC stand for?
Disease Control. Commission for Disease Control.
Center for Disease Control.
Oh, Center.
Oh. Yeah, CDC. And that's one of the main players that you look at. I think that's who Sydney said she, growing up, wanted to go to work for, too.
She did.
To study infectious diseases.
Yeah, she used to want to be involved in that.
We played
She was wanting to go and fight Ebola. That was her favorite disease.
I remember we played a board game one Christmas break. We played that pandemic board game.
Yeah.
It was pretty fun.
Yeah.
We stopped it, I believe. I think we all won. It's one of those cooperative games where you actually have to work together.
Yeah, or else you get wiped out.
Yeah. So I think there's a new one, too. Like, there's a Super Pandemic or something that came out as well. Huh. I haven't played that one, though.
Is that like Super Mario Brothers?
Maybe so. Now, where does the federal government get off telling us who we can and can't quarantine?
It's part of the Interstate Commerce Clause, because it affects interstate commerce and our economy. And as you can see, it did. It affected the stock market greatly.
No doubt. I'd like to get an APB out for the person who killed my 401k.
Yeah. Well, as long as you don't sell it, you're okay. It'll bounce back.
No. And that's one of those things, too. Like, you know,
on paper.
When you're younger, too, you can be a bit more risky with the stock market to grow your retirement. You know, if you were getting closer to retirement, you would not want to have all of your stocks, so all your retirement so liquid in stocks, you'd want to be less risky. But right now, you know, there's time.
Well, my retirement plan is work until the day before I die, and then I die the next day after I retire.
Gotcha.
And that way I'm covered.
Now, what is the prime way that someone can be apprehended, detained, or otherwise quarantined by the federal government? What's the main vehicle for that? And it's pretty rare.
A court order.
No, we did not talk about court orders at all in this episode.
A SWAT vehicle.
No, not physically, like actual logistically how.
Oh, the CDC. Oh, an executive order.
That's right. Third time's a charm. It's an executive order.
I was warming up.
So executive orders are ones that come from the president.
Yeah.
And the president would specify who would be quarantined for how long and all those different things. And it's pretty rare, like we said, before just recently when President Trump did it, the last time it was done was 1963. So it's pretty rarely done. And the last question, as possibly a teaser into our next episode.
A teaser.
Who was Mary Mallon?
Typhoid Mary.
That's right.
She spread her nasty disease everywhere she went, and she didn't succumb to the disease. She just spread it. And she was a cook, and she coughed in your soup.
Now, here's the bonus question. And if you get this one right, you can leave the quarantine in the basement after we finish the episode.
Oh, good. I'd hate to be quarantined in the basement.
What was Typhoid Mary carrying? What disease?
Cholera.
So Typhoid Mary was carrying cholera?
That's like, what color was Robert E. Lee's old gray mare?
Wouldn't she be Cholera Mary then?
Well, what's typhoid? I never heard of typhoid.
Well, it's typhoid fever. It's a disease.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll guess typhoid.
That's what she had. Yes, you're right. So you can leave. You successfully answered my riddle question.
Who's buried in Grant's tomb?
You can leave the basement. I really thought you missed that for a second. Then I realized you were...
It's too obvious. See, it's too obvious. It's got to be... It's a curveball. They throw me a curveball. That's what it was. I was ready for your curveball.
That was a fastball coming right down the pipe. teed up, ready for you to swing on.
I was too slow to catch it.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is firing people. Firing people is never an easy job, even when they really deserve it. I have had to fire quite a few since I started running my own business. Not so much when I worked for the railroad. There were a lot that deserved it, but with the union rules and all the red tape, no one ever really got fired. They might be off for a while, but they always came back, sometimes with back pay. So firing anyone on the railroad was a complete waste of time and effort. There are no such issues at a small business. I once had to fire a famous person, although to be fair, he wasn't famous then. He went on to a successful podcast career, so I would kind of like to think of myself as his launching pad to stardom. His name was Griffin something, McNamara or McKees or, I don't know, something Mac. Even though he basically disregarded me instructing him not to go to Lollapalooza, he went anyway. The kid always reminded me of my son-in-law. Sometimes I had to let people go due to work performance, or lack thereof. We had people who simply didn't show up half the time. When I told them we had to let them go for their attendance of 20 hours out of a 40-hour week, they insisted they really needed the job. I found that hard to believe when they were missing as much as making. I said, "Do you know how you could double your income?" And he said, "How?" And I said, "Show up for work." I had others do things at work, which I choose not to share, that we said, "Oh my God, we can't take that chance of that ever happening again." And so they were asked to leave. No matter how egregious, I still felt bad about it. Sometimes I didn't fire people. I downsized them. The work had decreased, and we just didn't need as many employees. It was no fault of their own. It was just a numbers game. I never told any of them this, but being downsized is really the same thing as being fired. It just sounds better because no one is to blame except for the economy. Damn economy. One fault of mine is that I have always been slow to fire people, even when they really deserved it. I knew in my gut I should, but I just kept hoping for improvement, even though I really should have known better. I have had people actually say, "Yeah, I figured this was coming. I haven't been doing my job for a while." Or, "Yeah, I haven't had much of anything to do in a while." One time even, "I'm really glad you are firing me because I hate this job, but couldn't figure out how to quit because I don't think I can find a job anywhere else." I kind of understand this, as I was downsized from the railroad, which, as I already stated, is being fired. I just got some money to go with it. They called it a buyout. It may have been a buyout, but it was still not voluntary. Anyway, I was really upset when this happened, but I had been miserable for a long time there. I couldn't quit because I had bills, a mortgage, and a wife and kids. Turns out they did me a huge favor because my life got better than I ever thought it could after that, and I love coming to work every day now. I never would have had the nerve to make that move myself. So I'd like to think that sometimes firing somebody is the best thing I can do for them. Just like that McInerney kid. This has been Tommy's Random Thought.